Welcome to East Meets West, episode 201. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And thanks again to O'Doctor for joining us last week. It was a fun show. Most people liked it, although a few people in our comments said that they thought he was rude. They thought he was mean. They thought we didn't like him. All of those things I don't think are true. I don't think he was rude at all. He was in your face. That's O'Doctor. If you never met Owen J.J. Stone, then maybe you don't know, but the guy is blunt. He's in your face. That's who he is. But you know what? You always know what you're going to get. A kind of a different version of Roger in a way, because Roger, you always say what you mean. You may not be as in your face, but you know, you're an honest guy.
I will not be in your face, because if I don't like you, I won't be anywhere near you, especially your face.
yes, that's true.
It's true. So yeah, I mean, he's basically if I drank caffeine, which I don't.
Yeah, that's not a bad way of putting it. Have you seen The Hangover yet?
No, I have not. I know he watched the
Hot Tub Time Machine.
But I was doing a lot this week, and unfortunately I did not get the time. And I need to locate the movie. Someone has it at work, and I don't know who, but I need to find it.
If you didn't listen to last week's show, O'Doctor was on as a guest because he happened to be sitting around the cabbage. Or cottage, depending on how you look at it. And he challenged Roger to see The Hangover, which O'Doctor thought was an amazing movie, because Roger was going on about Hot Tub Time Machine. So Roger challenged him to see Hot Tub Time Machine. Then we're going to bring him back on for a compare notes face-off. And O'Doctor's kept up his part of the bargain so far. He went and saw Hot Tub Time Machine, said he thought it was pretty good, and he's ready to bring it. But we got to get Roger to watch The Hangover. So
yes, I need to get a hangover.
You need to get a hangover. It doesn't take much with you, does it?
No. Actually, you know, the thing is, I realized what happens to me when I drink. Now, for the longest time, I thought, well, I don't really suffer a hangover in the traditional fashion where after a night of binging, a lot of rum, a lot of Coke, a lot of vodka, what have you, I fall into a stupor, pass out, and then wake up the next morning slightly dazed, confused. And with a migraine, you know, the size of a freaking coconut that landed on my head. But what actually happens is, because I don't actually wake up with a headache, is my body goes through that entire cycle within like an hour and a half. So I will get the headache, I will feel all that, and then I'll fall asleep and I wake up, I'm fine.
I can attest to that. I have seen Roger go through that entire process within an hour before. My theory is you lack the enzyme alcohol polymerase.
Could very well be. I am not a drinker, and I have never made that a hidden fact in my life.
Yeah, it will help you greatly in many ways. You will never have to fight alcoholism because you just can't drink enough to get it.
And I often have many stories after the night is done from everyone else who's taken more than their fair share.
You're good for a designated driver. I'll give you that too.
I'm good for the storyteller. So, you know, the blackmail.
What happened last night? Well, ask Roger. He'll tell you. Yes. So anyway, thanks to O'Doctor for being on. And I know he popped into the comments at subbrilliant.com/EMW and mentioned that he had seen Hot Tub Time Machine. So,
and I recommend everyone who hasn't seen it, see it.
I'm looking forward to having you guys back on for that. Also, we got some people talking about Doctor Who.
Who?
Because it has premiered in the United Kingdom. It premiered on Saturday evening in the UK. And we, Roger and I, got to see it legally here in the United States by attending WonderCon here in San Francisco. Just luck would have it. WonderCon happening in San Francisco the exact same weekend as the premiere of Doctor Who in the UK. So they were nice enough to have a panel, which essentially wasn't a panel. They just showed the first episode as a sneak peek.
They had BBC America, or rather a representative of BBC America, come and give essentially a screening for the first season opener episode. And they gave two because there was a huge, huge crowd. And I think they anticipated that. So they had two showings of that episode. And you know what? I have to say I was really, really impressed. I didn't know what to expect from the new Doctor. Matt Smith was the X factor. But I came away thinking, wow, that is probably one of the most exciting, action-packed episodes I have seen of a Doctor Who in quite some time.
I agree, but not everyone does. There was one gentleman we were with, a friend of ours, who was sort of tepid about it. He liked it, but he didn't love it yet. And then some folks on the blog have mentioned that they've seen it. Lake Show said, while the episode was strictly average, especially by Moffat standards, I'm very confident Matt Smith is going to bring around a very great doctor. His acting was what created the most glee in this episode. This is especially more true after looking at the first episodes of David Tennant during the Christmas special and subsequent, the early ones, the first Christmas special with Tennant, which on hindsight are a little awkward for him acting-wise and not seemingly as confident as young Matt Smith already seems to generate. Looking very forward to what Smith and Moffat have in store. So that's kind of a mixed review as well. And then a couple other, another short one here from Citizen Plane. I'm a bit ashamed to admit it, but I've never really gotten into Doctor Who. However, after all of the talk about it on the show, I'm going to go back and watch all of the modern era stuff. So he's just getting started. But what do you think about this? And I've seen a couple people on Twitter, too, saying like, eh, I didn't think it was a great episode. Thought Matt Smith was good, but it certainly wasn't Moffat's best episode.
You know, I can see it from a story plot kind of point of view. It was very simplistic and the story wasn't all that interesting. It's like, you know, an alien menace comes down to threaten Earth. You know, it's part of the course for the Doctor Who universe. But what made it so interesting was, I think maybe because so many people were so ambivalent about the new guy coming in, that his performance is kind of what jazzed everyone up. It's his, you know, it's his silliness at the beginning where, I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, he runs into his new companion at an early age, and, you know, he's has these hunger pangs, and he's going through their fridge eating a variety of foods like apples, and, like, I want an apple. I really like apples. And he eats one, spits it out, hate apples. Move on to the next food item. So there was a bit of levity, and there was I think they're trying to cement the character's personality early on, so they're not going to be, you know, where they can kind of convince the audience that this is indeed an actor who can portray Doctor Who. And, you know, you don't have to worry about it being, you know, some shallow or some you know, some cheap imitation of Dave Tennant or, you know, Chris Eccleston.
Yeah, you know, the bit you're talking about with the going through the fridge was funny because it acknowledged that he had just gone through regeneration and he didn't quite know himself yet. And there were a couple other allusions like that. I didn't think that was that great of a part because I saw the bit coming, but I still laughed. It wasn't painful. It wasn't like groaner, yeah. Which sometimes with Russell T. Davis, you would get those groaners where you're like, oh, I totally know what this joke is coming and here it comes. And okay.
I knew the joke was coming, but I still found it funny. So, you know, maybe that's the sign of someone who's doing the joke well. If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Sorry, I was distracted. It was a home run, first home run of the new season because I'm watching the the baseball
nice.
right next to me on my sling box. Pardon me for that, but yes, and it was the Yankees, and they're up 1-0. Boo. So anyway, yes, I think what I liked the most about Doctor Who was the fact that they kept a bit of David Tennant in Matt Smith without making it seem like they're trying to have this new doctor be David Tennant. And this is where I differed with our friend who is with us, because he thought it was too much like David Tennant, but I thought it walked the line quite well because I was really going to miss that fast patter, confident, throwing things out, spitting things out that they were able to do, which they actually did with Chris Eccleston as well. In the first season of the reboot. And I thought that they kept that in a way that felt like it was just momentum from having just regenerated. And he still kind of talked like that, but he was starting to bring it around to be his own type of confidence and character.
I mean, the Doctor is unique in that with every regeneration, he still is the same person deep inside, although his personality gets shifted somewhat. So, I mean, I expect that because, you know, that's who he is, and that's kind of maybe his inner doctor coming out. So that wasn't, I mean, if they did, I mean, I would give it 4 more episodes to really see how the character fleshes out. But from what I've seen so far, I mean, I really enjoyed it. And I think the companion is, you know, kind of a good match
I was really skeptical about Amy Pond. I was that's the name of the character. I just from seeing her in photo shoots, I was like, oh, she looks kind of bland. I'm used to Martha Jones or Donna Noble, who are both kind of outlandish in appearance in some ways. And Rose Tyler looked a little bland at first too, and turned out to be great. So I think they have written another strong character, which thank God kind of makes up for the sort of appearances, and that's how shallow I was being, judging by appearances.
Yes, you are a very shallow person. Yes. I think in the end, I'm going to give it 5 episodes, so 4 more episodes, until I'm fully and irrefutably convinced that this is a series I'm going to keep up with, because I like the Doctor. Chris Eccleston, it took me about 3 episodes to get in, because he just came out and it's like, that's kind of cool. I see what they have. Dave Tennant took 5 before I really warmed up to him.
Yeah,
that's what
I was
going
to say. I actually warmed up to Chris Eccleston right away, maybe like 2 episodes at tops. But I liked him right away because he was alien, because he looked different. He acted like someone who's not from Earth. And that is one thing that David Tennant and I don't think Matt Smith are going to have.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Eccleston, he was kind of, as cold as a fish. He was really distant initially. And by the 3rd episode, I warmed to his particular, iteration. Dave Tennant took me a while to kind of get into, but, as soon as you got in, you locked in, you really loved it. I think Matt will be the same way. I could be wrong. This could be like he peaked early and the rest of the episodes will suck.
I do hate the bow tie. I don't know about you.
I don't mind the bow tie, but it must spin at least once.
Of course. How could it not? I also have to point out that we were with someone else, a different friend of ours, who had never watched any Doctor Who. And so it was interesting to get her opinions after sitting there and watching this, having none of the background, not missing David Tennant, not getting any of the allusions, because they put some nice allusions to previous Doctors and the fact that he's regenerating and rebooting in there. Those all went right over her head. But she still seemed to like it.
Yeah, and she thought, she liked it enough that I think she would continue seeing it if she could get it, because she doesn't have BBC America. Ironically, there were at least a dozen or so people I knew that really wanted to see it, and they were kind of asking my opinion. So, what is it like? It's like, it's great. Oh, so tell me more. It's like, you don't want to spoil it for people, but I was basically telling them, it's like, don't worry, it's everything that you've expected out of Doctor Who, and I think everyone will be pleasantly surprised with Matt Smith's ability to maybe invoke a Doctor Who, I guess, or be Doctor Who. Invoke.
Yeah,
I like
to kind of carry that on. I know I saw a question spin by in the chat room a bit ago saying, hey, if I want to start watching Doctor Who, where should I start, right? Because the series has been going since the 60s, and it's pretty daunting.
But even before the 60s.
Was it the late 50s? I thought it was early 60s. But
it was like literally it's like shows like Are You Being Served? You can literally watch the BBC's transition from black and white to color TV because it's been that many years. I think it started in the 50s.
It may have been. Original run began in 1963, 23rd November. Early 60s. But I don't think if you're just getting into it, that you need to start with those. In fact, I wouldn't start with those because the new reboot is so much different. But here's the question. Some people say skip the first season, go back and get it later. Start with season 2 because of David Tennant and his run. I disagree. I think you start with season 1 with Chris Eccleston, even though you're going to lose him right away, because you get so much of the introduction. They did a really good job in that season of bringing in people who weren't watching Doctor Who before into the mythology.
It was essentially a reboot of the series. And one of the things they did consciously, I didn't realize this before until one of my British friends told me, is that when they wrote Doctor Who, some of it seems, if you're an adult, it feels tedious and long because they tend to over-explain everything. And this was done because it was aimed at children, and the producers were worried that a lot of the things would go over the kids' heads. So they made, an extra effort to kind of literally spell out everything. And that's one of the things you'll notice missing is that it's a little more adult in that, you know, they assume you're gonna get these things and things will come at you a lot quicker. So if you've never caught the series, I'm with Tom. You know, start off with Chris Eccleston. Probably avoid the movie because that will kind of confuse you.
What movie? You mean the movie for that they made for Fox in the 90s?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is considered canon. So
yes, it is. That is the 9th Doctor, right?
Yes. No.
Yes.
Yes.
Because we're with 11 with Matt Smith, David Tennant 10, Eccleston 9. Right?
Hold on. Well,
Matt Smith is the 11th Doctor.
Well, no, now we're
really getting geeky.
I'm sorry. We'll figure it out later. Maybe someone in the chat.
What did you think? They changed the titles, right? So they have a brand new look to the titles than they've had before. And they switched up the theme song, which has always been the same music. It's been the same theme song ever since the beginning. But they changed the arrangement. They changed the instrumentation from time to time. What did you think of the new one?
The logo, I'm not so crazy about. So instead of the TARDIS, they use a D and the W written in perspective of the TARDIS.
So instead of seeing the logo, it looks like they're making a TARDIS with the D and the W.
Exactly. And then the music, I've never been really bowled over by the music. I like it, and it's very, it's very identifiable with Doctor Who. But it was fine. It wasn't like, jumping out of my seat. It's like, oh, that's amazing.
I don't like it that much. I don't hate it either. But the new music harkens back a little more to the original, which is theremin. I think they're using a theremin in the new one, maybe. I don't know that for sure. So it sounds a little like the old one. And frankly, the old one kind of bored me a little. I love it out of sentimentality, but the new one from the reboot really rocked. I really like it. It's just so dramatic and really gets your blood moving. I don't feel like this one does that. I feel like this is kind of a step back in that way. Not that it ruins a series or anything, but I really liked the old Doctor Who music.
I mean, honestly, I think they should have used that old Time Lords song, the one that they always used to play at soccer or football games.
Yeah, they still play that. What is that? Is that KLF or somebody?
Yes, KLF.
And there's also a great mashup of that song with Green Day from I can't remember the DJ's name now, but he did a mashup like back 2004, 2005. Really like that. I really like that version even better. They should have used that version with Green Day's Holiday mashed up with the KLF Doctor Who song.
So Sylvester McCoy was 7th. Paul McGann was the 8th Doctor.
Paul McGann from the movie. Now, see, here's one thing. I would watch the movie, but I wouldn't watch it until I've watched about 2 or 3 seasons of the reboot. Once you've started to get to know the Daleks and the Cybermen and all that, then I think it's cool to go back. And I wouldn't start with the movie. I'd end with the movie. But I'd go back and I would watch a few selected episodes of every previous Doctor. Watch a Bill Hartnell, just so you get a sense of the original. Maybe watch one of the earlier episodes. They don't have the first episode. It's lost, I believe. But you can watch some of the early ones and just kind of get a sense. They might have the premiere episode restored. My memory's fuzzy on that. And then there's some great episodes that, like, the 3 Doctors, the 5 Doctors,
five where doctors.
They kind of bring several of the Doctors in together. There's a good Tom Baker series about the origin of the Daleks. That's good. And then I would probably watch that Paul McGann, just for continuity's sake. There's a little bit of background. That'd be the last thing I'd watch.
But, you know, if you haven't come to, if you've never seen it, you're just wondering what the fuss is about, just literally just start with Chris Eccleston's episodes and then just work your way from there. And I honestly think you won't be missing as much unless you really get into the universe and you want to learn more about it. Then it would be beneficial to watch some of the earlier episodes. But if you just want to get a feel for it, you just want a good, fun sci-fi show, start with Chris Eccleston and move forward.
Now, Stargate Universe relaunched on Friday, taking over the spot that Caprica has abandoned as Caprica goes to a mid-season break. Did you catch it?
No, I was with my friends over at Conjoined Comics, conjoinedcomics.com. They do.
Are you sponsored now?
No, but they're my friends and I'm plugging them. But
this friend visit is sponsored by.
Well, we actually, he should have been there because we were there with Josh. And we had dinner over at Henry Hoonan's, which you also know. And we literally spent the next 2 hours talking Dune, like just various facets of Dune, because Carrie just really loves Dune and she reads a lot all about it. But her co-creator friend Stephanie hasn't read the books, and she's always, you know, making fun of Carrie because she's always bringing up Dune and all these conversations where they don't really apply. It's just, you know, oh, you're talking about sand. You know what else is great about sand? Dune. Kind of thing. And then I brought her over to the IO9 party, and then she totally geeked out, and it was nice. I think it enabled her to kind of get all the Dune-ish issues out of her, at least
get that thing. Move that worm out of her system. Deworm her.
Yes. So I unfortunately did not watch it, so hopefully I can catch it somewhere.
Well, check it out. It's a good start to the, restart. I guess it's the mid-season pickup for them. We do find out a little bit more about what happened to Scottish guy. Why can't I remember his name suddenly?
Dr. something. No, wait.
Frost, but it's not Frost.
The guy they left on the planet.
Yeah.
All right.
Last time we saw him, he had just been beaten up by Colonel Young. Dr. Rush. Thank you, Special 8471. Dr. Rush, we find out a little bit more about him. We get a space battle.
Okay. Now I got to watch because you said space battle.
Uh-huh. Space battle with aliens. And the story gets a little less introspective. It's a little bit less hand-wringing about, oh, what are we going to do about the ship? There's a lot more intrigue and action in this one. So,
cool. So a lot less navel gazing and a lot more forward-looking.
Yes, hopefully. Definitely. All right, we got a blog posting from Al All One Word, which was written all one word, regarding the delay of TV shows. Because as we mentioned, Roger and I got to watch the Doctor Who premiere because it was being showed at WonderCon. But otherwise, we would have had to resort to breaking the law to watch it because it doesn't premiere in the United States until April 17th. All One Word says, I found this a very interesting discussion. Most of the time, I associate waiting for shows on TV to be something that happens for everyone else in the world out of the States. Down here in Australia, we can wait for anything from months to years for some TV shows. It was kind of comforting to hear it happens elsewhere, and we are not alone. Actually got a few responses on Twitter the same way. Doctor Who is an interesting one. In Australia, it is going to premiere online before it is on TV, midnight on the day it will air in prime time, but it is still nearly 2 weeks behind the UK premiere and not going to be in HD. Based on that, I think there is a high chance that there is some deal between the BBC and other broadcasters as to when it can be first aired. I may or may not have watched it by the time it airs legally online, but we'll stream it again to ensure I'm counted towards the online ratings. This brings up a point on ratings. If I don't have a ratings box and they never know if I watch shows or not when they air, how is me watching them earlier than when they air on TV hurting anyone? I, like many downloaders of Fine TV, want to collect the show and will purchase the DVD Blu-ray box sets when they come out for the collectible item and quality. So he brings up an interesting ethical point here, Roger. If you're not a Nielsen family in the United States or whatever the equivalent is in your country, and you know your view isn't actually counted in the ratings, are you really hurting anybody if you just, you know, watch it some other way?
It's really, I think, an issue of control. And it's the same reason. It's a really stupid reason. It's the same stupid reason why movie studios used to stagger releases of new movies. Instead of just releasing the same movie around the planet on the same day, they staggered it. And they staggered it because they had different deals in place. They had like, well, we can only do the DVDs this, that. In other words, they timed it for the studio's convenience, what would make the best sense for them to roll out the PR machine, get the, you know, the registers ready to rake in the cash kind of thing. I think for broadcast rights, oftentimes what they'll do is, especially if it's in a market like Australia, the US, where you could have competing channels or competing broadcasters, they'll have basically a bidding war. And until that's solved, they don't want to move forward with anything, including showing the episodes, because oftentimes one of the items that is negotiated is, well, okay, if we're going to carry your show, Doctor Who, you can't show it before we actually air it on our TV network. That way we're insured of getting the eyeballs that will drive up the ratings and not just solely online. It's really just a money thing.
Okay. Well, A, that doesn't apply here because in the United States, it's running on BBC America. So it's the BBC's own show. And I think it's more likely that the reason this time it's delayed is because BBC America couldn't fit it in earlier. They already have a schedule laid out of shows they're committed to showing in series. And they probably looked at it and said, you know, the earliest we can go is 3 weeks because the BBC stated they wanted to keep the delay between the US and the UK as minimal as possible. So I know what you said is absolutely true in most cases. I don't think that's what happened with the US. But you're also avoiding the question, which is ethically speaking, if I'm not counted in the ratings, I know it's illegal. I know it's a copyright violation, but if I'm not counted in the ratings, ethically speaking, does it matter if I don't see the ads by watching it in some other manner?
Well, you know,
actually hurting the ratings.
Well, you're not hurting the ratings in the U.S. or Britain, as the case may be. But if they do get someone in Australia to broadcast it, you might potentially hurt their future ratings.
How so?
I guess the line of thinking is, well, they already watched it, so there will be less of an impact when it first comes on our stations. Kind of a syndication mentality.
So in other words, you're an influencer. And yes. Because you already watched it, you might get other people to watch it, or you might spoil it for other people. Yeah, and one of those people might happen to be in the Nielsen family or being rated.
I'm not saying it's logical. I'm just saying I think that's the mindset that goes with it.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting scenarios, right, where, you know, statistically speaking, the reason they do ratings the way they do is that you only have to have 5,000 people, if properly picked, to represent a statistical set of reliability, the you know, tastes and habits of the whole, right? Mm-hmm. So when you go and make an individual choice, it doesn't seem like you're affecting that at all, right? Because you have free will. You can do whatever you want. Your choice doesn't actually make anybody who has a Nielsen box do anything differently. But I guess the way I'm thinking about it is, if you are making that choice to go BitTorrent and the sample is representative, then there's somebody in that sample doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it sounds like, you know, quantum physics going back in time or spooky action at a distance, but in a sense, when it's properly selected, and we can have a whole other discussion about whether Nielsen is properly selected. And I used to call Arbitron arbitrary because of the way they made their sample. But if the sample is made properly and scientifically valid, then you are in a sense being part of the people that affect the ratings, because there's going to be people like you doing that. So it becomes an existential problem.
And then ultimately it's, in the future, as people go more on demand and a la carte, you know, will we have to kind of shift, or at least change the way we approach distribution for a lot of these shows, especially internationally? Since you have to deal with so many things. I mean, especially TV, you have to go through, not only you have to pick one of the five or six, you know, networks in the country or whatever to carry it. You got to negotiate the rights, the copyrights, any censorship rules that might apply to the country, like swearing, partial nudity and all that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes in. I used to read a magazine in college called TV World, and it goes through, it was basically an industry magazine of distribution, you know, for different shows throughout the world. And it was very interesting to see kind of like the deals that were made, even for shows like Glee. You know, Glee is in many countries around the world, but it's not in all countries because negotiations are still ongoing. I think France recently signed a deal, or a French channel, to carry that in France. So it's a lot of moneyed interests involved. And when you get a lot of people with money involved, then, you know, things begin to get complicated because everyone wants a cut of the pie, and no one wants to be seen as getting the crumbs or leftovers.
I think we will slowly move away from that model. I do. I think that's as people wake up and realize that, You know, you can't have an immature emotional response to piracy, that, you know, those are selfish little babies and they should stop whining and stealing things. When you start to realize that, you know what, it's kind of like what we were talking about before. There's individual action and there's social action, and you have to treat it as a social issue and not say, like, I'm mad at these individuals for stealing stuff, but go, hey, you know what, when you have something like the internet, you've got to expect that these things are going to happen. How do we dissuade that? You're going to have part of that battle fought by having worldwide releases at least closer to each other. And that's going to take a long time to work through all these issues that you're talking about that have been built up over decades of a system that tolerates that. Because, you know what, if it takes a couple months to negotiate the rights with a couple of French television channels to get Glee over there, what's the harm? The people in France can't see Glee. Well, yeah, now they can.
Yeah.
So now there is harm, and it's going to take a while for people to wrap their brains around that and come up with new ways of negotiating those things and conducting business.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, oh, hopefully it'll maybe take only 5 years, but, you know, it's the thing, and this is the one thing you realize when you deal with especially international television. Here in the U.S., or at least in North America, television is, okay, in the U.S., is treated as a business. It's like automotive parts or produce or you know, linen or clothes. It's just another way we make money. Linen, all right? I was looking at my sheets. But
for textiles.
Textiles, that's a much better word. But for many countries around the world, like the French, they can see it as a cornerstone of their culture, as of their national culture. So they're very protective of it. They're very like, well, you know what, you know, but before we let your show in our country, there's going to be changes made. Certain words will be have to adjust it, so they're more French and less, you know, English kind of thing. Or if you're like in a very conservative country, that's too much skin. That would kind of that would incite the population to do lewd and very, you know, disgusting acts that we don't want. So, you know, you're crossing a barrier where money, but at the same time, kind of a national consciousness or cultural identity is also at play. So you have, you know, there's this big complex web. Although what you see in music, you tend to see a lot less of that. But in TV, because it's so visual and so prominent, and it's everyone's mind, they're very, very, very protective of those markets.
I think all of those issues can be front loaded, though, right? I mean, if you know that the French are going to commonly object to certain terms, or you know a certain market is not going to allow so much skin, you can actually take care of that in the shooting and the editing and the post-production.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait until the negotiation. It's almost like it was okay to be lazy in the past because you'd have time before you'd had to get anything done. Now you don't have the that luxury anymore.
You know, put it this way. Say if you did Baywatch and you made billions of dollars in the U.S. and you find out that you have a lot of fans, say like in the Middle East. Well, you know, those viewers want to see the American version, but the only way you can get it to them, either like in a DVD or broadcast, is to do what the state censors want, and you have to start clipping it. Even though what the actual audience wants is not that, they don't want a watered down version or a censored version. They want the original version. You basically have to go through this kind of a state filter before it can make it through. Or you can be like most people and just import it. Like, you know, I used to import music.
Well, you don't import anymore. You just download it. What are you talking about? You don't import anything. If you're going to go that route, you just steal it. There's no need to wait for imports. We're talking about the broadcast infrastructure who's trying to control the message. And I think that, you know, we can make an argument that that kind of control is going to erode away, the kind of control we're talking about with the French and the skin and all of that, that's going to go away because of the internet as well. But that will take even longer. You can delude yourself that you have control over broadcast for quite a long time, even on the internet. The BBC, for instance, operates an entire streaming on the iPlayer, and they still operate with a lot of the same controls that they operate on broadcast. For instance, restricting it to only UK viewers because they're the ones paying the license fee. So, I don't think it's about access. Access is taken care of. You can get anything you want, but I think you're right about the sensitivities and all of that can be thought of while you're shooting. In fact, Fair pointed out in the chat room that when Sex and the City was shooting, they actually began to shoot two versions, one for HBO that was going to air right away and another for TBS that they knew was going to air in syndication that wouldn't be quite as lascivious so that it could live up to TBS standards. And that's in the United States. So there's no reason that you can't kind of sketch out the different markets that you're going to need. And I might make a better product that way, right? Because you'll come actually...
27 versions.
You won't have to fix it after the fact. You can actually say, okay, we'll just shoot another version of that scene for India or wherever.
Or you could do it with the Wheel of Fortune and franchise it. Well, how many Wheel of Fortunes are there around the world?
Or American Idol, another good example of that.
Actually, it started out as Pop Idol, I believe.
It was only called Pop Idol in the UK. Every country it went to after that, it became Australian Idol or Indian Idol or American Idol in this case.
But I think that was the show that started it all, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Star Search actually started it all. But
well, yes. But Pop Idol was the first in the franchise. You're right. But that only lasted a season. Now American Idol is the flagship.
It's like a cruise ship.
Of that franchise. We'll see how long that lasts. I think that show is starting to go on its last legs.
I've only seen one or two bits of an episode. I've never seen an entire episode all at once of that show.
Well, this show is actually on its last legs now. We're going to wrap it up now. If you guys have comments, subbrilliant.com/EMW is the place to leave them. We got lots of great comments last week. Many of them angry at O'Doctor, and I can't stress enough that Roger and I both loved having him on.
Yeah, it was great.
Did not find him rude in any stretch of the word. Did not find ourselves annoyed by him. Can't wait to have him back on for the Hangover Hot Tub Time Machine rematch at some point in the future.
Which we will both, all three of us will be hungover and in the hot tub.
Absolutely. The only way to do that episode. Seriously. All right. Thanks, everybody. Don't forget, you can watch us live every Sunday at 5 p.m. ish, right after This Week in Tech. We air on live.twit.tv. Thanks to Leo for letting us do that on the Twit Network. Thanks to Jammerbee for producing the show on their end for us this week. And thanks to all of you for listening and watching. And thanks to you, Roger.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll see you later.
Bye.